John and Mary Margaret is a recently released novel about an interracial couple who meets at Ole Miss during the tumult of the 1960s. The author, Susan Cushman, will be the next speaker in the Southbound Lecture Series from Southern Lit Alliance here in Chattanooga. Susan, a native of Jackson, Mississippi, who lives in Memphis, will appear via Zoom on Wednesday starting at 6 p.m. I spoke with her and Linda Levan, Executive Director of Southern Lit Alliance. Linda, Susan, thanks for joining us.
Thanks for having us.
Thank you so much.
Linda, the latest Southbound, tell us a bit more about it.
We do these great author visits in our Southbound series, and this one is going to be Susan Cushman, which you will hear more about. But this is an ongoing series. We were hoping to do them in person, but with the circumstances, we were doing these virtual for a little while longer and having that option.
And Susan, you are a writer. You are from Mississippi. You now live in Memphis, and Memphis has been your home for quite some time.
Right, since 1988. Almost half of my life, but not quite. Because I was born in Jackson in 1951. I turned 70 in March. And I'm having a wonderful late life career as a writer, doing things I put off for the many years that I was a stay-at-home mom, raising three kids. I now have four granddaughters in Arizona and Colorado. They left Tennessee. I don't know why. No. Anyway, and so I started writing, and I have a bunch of published essays in various journals and anthologies. But in the last 5 years, I've published seven books, the most recent of which is John and Mary Margaret, my novel.
This is set in your native Mississippi at Ole Miss.
Right.
1960s, the civil rights era, as we call it.
So John is a black boy from Memphis, and Mary Margaret is a white girl from Jackson, Mississippi, and they have a literature class together their freshman year at Ole Miss in 1966. And first, Mary Margaret's mainly impressed with how smart John is. He's pre-law. He wants to be a lawyer and eventually a judge and really help with civil rights issues back in Memphis, where he's from. And his father was a football coach. His older brother went to college on a football scholarship, and that's what John was expected to do. But he had different plans, and he wanted to go to Ole Miss, even though this was 66. So keep in mind, only 3 years earlier, in 1963, was when James Meredith was the first black person enrolled at Ole Miss. So this is still very groundbreaking, what John is doing. Mary Margaret, on the other hand, was very much like my life in the white privilege bubble. I'm making little quotation marks with my fingers for your radio audience to know. You know, she grew up country club set. Her parents were ultra conservative. But as a young girl, she had a happen chance meeting with Eudora Welty, the famous Mississippi author who lived a few blocks from her home in the Belhaven neighborhood, a historic area in Jackson. I also lived in that neighborhood in the 70s as a newlywed. And Ms. Welty's home is right across the street from Belhaven College, where I went to school after I was at Ole Miss. And she was famous for being called the Popsicle Lady, because all the children in the neighborhood would knock on her door in those really hot, humid summer days, and she would give out popsicles. And I never did that, and Mary Margaret doesn't do that, but she does have a wonderful visit with her after helping her with her groceries at the neighborhood Jitney Jungle. And they discuss, Mary Margaret thought they were just going to talk about writing and fiction and short stories. And Miss Welty wants to talk about politics and race issues. And it's the beginning of an awakening for Mary Margaret that continues for decades. And of course, they're trying to date. Does not work. John is beat up outside her sorority house, the Tri-Delta house, which was my sorority house. And it's obvious it's not going to work. So they part ways. Their separate lives are documented in the book during 50 years of civil rights history in Mississippi and Memphis. But they meet again. And I don't want to give away too many spoilers about how they meet again, but they do meet again, I think, 35 years later. And I will say that both of their spouses have Alzheimer's. And that's a connective tissue to this because my mother had Alzheimer's. And my first book was a memoir, Tangles and Plaques, A Mother and Daughter Face Alzheimer's.
All of this centers on not only history, but also memory.
Right. And so for me, in writing Mary Margaret's story, I did not have to do research because there's so much of my story there. In writing John's story, I not only needed memory, I needed a lot of help, a lot of research. Fortunately, I have two good friends who are Black authors, Jeffrey Blunt and Ralph Eubanks, and they both read early drafts of the book and gave me a whole lot of feedback, which was very helpful. And they both have fabulous books out as well. Because for a white woman writing about a Black male protagonist, that was kind of a risk. Jeffrey shared this with me early on, which really gave me courage. There was an article in the Wall Street Journal in January by the Scottish author James Campbell, who wrote Talking at the Gates, A Life of James Baldwin. This article also quoted James Baldwin and Toni Morrison, but it's about cultural appropriation. And he says, writers on each side of the color line have more than just the right to cross the divide and report back. It is their duty. Imaginative life depends on cultural exchange. Literature depends on the imagination. To put it another way, culture is cultural appropriation. Any artist worth the name should be willing to take a punch for it. That was really helpful to me because I wasn't sure, you know, how many punches I was going to get for doing this. You know, my native Jacksonian Catherine Stockett, 10 years earlier, who wrote The Help, which became a bestseller in a movie, she got some pushback for it. But I thought she did an excellent job of showing how things really were. And that's what I wanted to do. You know, as I was having an awakening, I wanted to share that. I wanted to have a voice.
And how do you think your awakening, as you describe it, informed the writing of this book? This sounds like something that, even though you might have had the threads of this story for years and years and years, this sounds like something that only the type of awakening that you describe could bring it to the surface.
Absolutely. Kind of happened in two layers. The first layer was in 2019 when I published a collection of short stories called Friends of the Library. One of those 10 stories was about John and Mary Margaret. It was their story. And several of my readers said, "We want to know more. Please turn this into a novel." As I was considering doing that in 2020, in the middle of two epic things going on, the COVID pandemic and the social injustice protests that were going on. So here I am in Memphis. I'm 70 years old. There's no vaccine in the spring of 2020. There were some really excellent nonviolent protests going on in Memphis. Had I been younger and there not been COVID, I would have been out on the streets joining the protest. And I was frustrated because I couldn't. And I was talking to my husband about it. And he's saying, "Well, you're a writer. That's your voice. Write this." And I'm like, "Well, how am I going to write this?" And then people started saying to turn the short story into a novel. So these two things converged in the spring of 2020. And in about 3 or 4 months, I wrote this novel and told John and Mary Margaret's story. And another key part to that is I have two adopted children from South Korea, and my daughter is married to a Black man, and I have four mixed-race granddaughters to whom I dedicated the book. So their issues are very close to my heart in a personal way, as well as in a universal way.
For some authors, focusing on these topics, as you are in this novel, they have a balancing act between the story and the message that they might want to impart with the reader. What I am hearing from you here is the story is the message and the message is the story.
Excellent, Ray. You couldn't have said it better, because this is a fiction. This is a love story. This is not an angry book. It's not a nonfiction historical book. There are plenty of those out there to read about. In fact, I have references in the back of the book for further reading. But I wanted to use art. I wanted to use fiction for my voice in this story. I have quotes at the beginning of a lot of the chapters, and this one from Eudora Welty really tells a lot about why I wanted to do this. And she says, "Great fiction shows us not how to conduct our behavior, but how to feel. Eventually, it may show us how to face our feelings and face our actions and to have new inklings about what they mean. A good novel of any year can initiate us into our own new experience." So that was part of what I hoped for in writing and publishing the novel. And I was so excited that Kohler Books, who had published Friends of the Library, saw the timeliness of it and was able to turn it around pretty quickly. I think I got it to them the summer of 2020, and it came out the summer of 2021, which is a quick turnaround.
That's warp speed in the literary world.
Exactly.
And Linda, that quote that Susan just read from Eudora Welty, if anything can serve as a compass for what you and Southern Lit Alliance do with the Southbound Lecture Series, that's it.
Absolutely. I mean, our mission is to encourage passionate readers and writers. And one of the reasons we do this is because of the benefits of reading literature are just so many. One of the things research shows is that people who read literature are more empathetic because they are seeing things through a character's eyes, as well as have better critical thinking skills because you are analyzing, you're thinking about the character, you're predicting. And that's so much of what we really want people to understand and experience.
And that applies to stories that we've heard before in some way, but coming around again, seeing them than we might have 5, 10, 20, let alone 50 years ago.
Absolutely. I think if you read a book when you're 20 and then you turn around and read it when you're 50, you get completely different things out of it because your life experience has changed. They're great at any time and speak to you differently. And that's what we hope to do. You know, we do a lot of literature festivals and author visits, writing contests, writing workshops to help people just really get into the words and the benefit of either writing them or reading them.
And for people who want more information about this particular event and how they can connect online, where can they go?
This event with Susan is September 1st at 6 p.m. It will be on Zoom. So all they have to do is go to our website, southernlitalliance.org, and go to the link. When they register, then they will immediately receive an email back with the invite, the Zoom invite for them to participate. It is free, though we would encourage donations to help our efforts.
All right. Linda, Susan, thanks so much.
Thanks so much for your time.
Thanks for having us.
Also, Susan Cushman's website is susancushman.com.